Well, welcome to the show, Michael. Thank you very much for coming on. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, so I've been a technical co-founder of many different companies in the past and worked also within music, but from a product standpoint, building streaming services and different services that have benefited artists and tried to bring equality to the music business.
Awesome. And let's take it back to streaming in particular. What was the company that you were taking a look at and that you were building during your time in music?
So when I first started, I built a company called Blue Playlist, and what it was pretty much what Spotify is today, but I did it back in 2010. So I think it was maybe a year or two before Spotify entered the US. And then on top of that, after that, I ended up starting a separate music service called SongTwist, and that was focused on helping independent artists.
And what was the kind of process behind? Why did you get into that? Why did it come to that point that you're like, you know what? I need to do something about this.
Well, because when I was working on Blue Playlist, what I figured out was that there was this massive inequality in the music business. And I started working on Blue Playlist really just from a consumer perspective. I like listening to music. I figured we needed something that helped people listen to music more conveniently. And there at that time, I think iTunes was the most popular service around, and Pandora was just starting, but there wasn't really anything that was on demand that helped listeners listen to music easily, exactly what they wanted to hear. And so that's why I got into it. But as I started to realize some of the flaws in the actual business, something I noticed was that no other service who had actually tried to create a service like this ended up being profitable. Profitability was very difficult for them. And in trying to actually make my own business profitable, I got into the world of royalties. I got into the world of, copyright and artist compensation. And what I discovered was that there was this huge discrepancy between major artists and the money that was being made by the major record labels and money that was actually being made and retained by independent artists and artists who are not on a major label. So that kind of sparked this big interest in me. And at the time, I was going to college for legal studies, but a big part of legal studies is actually political science. And one of the big things that you learn in that major is you learn a little bit about history and you learn a little bit about economic equality. And what I figured out was that the music industry was kind of this like microeconomic environment that was representative of what technology would ultimately do, but it was a situation where there was this mass inequality between the people who already had a lot of money and the people who were just trying to get started. And so the reason I launched SongTwist following Blue Playlist was kind of an all-you-could-eat music service, kind of like I said, like Spotify is today. But SongTwist was more, it came out in light of what I had learned in trying to make something that would actually help, artists. I wanted to make something that would help kind of balance out this equality problem in the music business.
So do you think today, given that obviously we have Spotify's and so on, I mean, we're about 10 years on, right? A decade on. Do you think that that problem is still there?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's never really gone away. And I think, it's interesting. If you look at the music business today and what technology has afforded us to be able to do, there's a lot of benefits to technology. And I think in a lot of ways, it's kind of even the playing field, but maybe not in the ways that people think it has. I think when people think of streaming, they think, oh, well, now we have Spotify, now we have these streaming services, that has helped level the playing field for artists. What a lot of people don't realize is that it's the same players who used to operate the old music business, but just with a different face, a different facade. And a lot of the same problems are still there. But if I look at my personal experience working in startups, and even though I'm not an artist myself, I think I can equate a lot of what I've gone through as an entrepreneur to the life of an artist. If you look at it from a perspective of like, if you were to take an artist and just replace the word artist with entrepreneur or startup, and then replace the word record label with investor. There's a lot of parallels between the two. And I think, you know, even in the world of investing and with startups, as technology has advanced, the expectations for startups has increased. So there's more expectation for a startup to become profitable, or if not profitable, at least get further along before someone will want to invest in it. And so with the music business, if you look at like record labels and artists, because of the advances in technology, we don't have to. And as a startup owner, like, we don't need to rely on investors as much as we used to, because now there's so many tools and so many things available to us to be able to build technology ourselves without a lot of significant financial investment. And I think for artists, it's kind of the same situation where it used to be with, say, physical record sales. You had to go and get a contract with the record label if you wanted to actually get your music into stores and sell CDs and with, you know, physical material. And nowadays, that's just not how it works. Technology has changed the whole game to where everything is online, it's cloud-based, and this idea of scarcity, or that you only have so many stores in a certain region, it's just not there anymore. And at the same time, the technology has afforded artists the ability to promote and distribute their music and even create it more easily than before. So it just like within startups, you know, we're able to do so much more with less reliance on investors. Well, artists also today, because of technology, are able to do so much more without reliance on record labels. So even though in terms of streaming, the playing field has not been totally evened out, it has been helped by technology in other ways, because it's given artists the ability to compete more easily.
Yeah, I understand that. So it goes back to this kind of gatekeeper mentality that always has resonated throughout the music industry from the get-go. You know, there's one person at the top that's allowing X, Y, and Z like to come through, and it's supply and demand and whatever they need, obviously, and their personal interest they'll take. How does that translate into streaming? Because the reason why I'm asking you this is because the way I came across you as a person was because of a blog post that you wrote, and it was dissecting why things like Spotify will never be fully democratic, or why there will always be that gatekeeper. So I wonder if you can just explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think that the reason that there are still gatekeepers today, like I said, the same players are still running things. It's just now a different facade. And what I see when I look at the inequality problem in the music business, what I call it is the rich get richer effect, where you have, because of the way that these deals have been structured with major record labels, between major record labels and the major streaming services, most people are unaware of how the royalty system actually works. And so what it does is it creates this rich get richer effect, where the people who already have the most plays or the most money end up just making more. So like, if you look at how the royalty payout system works, it's kind of like, if you were to equate this to a different industry and say car manufacturing, the way that the royalty system works is like, so you've got, if say in the US, 80% of sales go to say Kia, that's not, you know, the case, but if it did, 80% of automobile sales go to Kia, and then 20% go to Hyundai. What they do is they don't pay based on actual sales. What they do is they say, well, your market share is already 80%. So any car that sells, 80% of that money is going to go to Kia, because they already hold 80% of the market share. That's how the royalty payouts actually work on these streaming services. So what it does is it means that anyone who already has a foothold and already has a significant amount of plays comparatively on the platform will continue to get the majority of the revenue, which in my opinion is very unfair.
Yeah, it is. And there's something else in the mix here, which I think a lot of people don't know about unless they dig even just slightly under the surface, which is that a lot of the major record labels are the investors, right?
Right. Yep, that's true. The major record labels own a stake, and I believe all the major music services, definitely Spotify.
Mm-hmm. And so that kind of brings me back around to, there's a current argument about whether a stream should be obviously a sale, or whether it should be, it classed as a sale of a record, or whether it should be a license. Do you have an opinion on that?
I don't know that I would say sales kind of implies a different thing. I mean, sales, it depends what you mean by sales. So when I look at, you know, what would be a more fair system for how royalties get paid out, in my opinion, it should be this a different model. There's this alternative model that a few people have come up with in the music business, where they have figured out that the more equitable model is not to actually, in that case of the automobile sales, not to pay 80% of the royalties to, you know, Kia, because they already have 80% of the market share. Instead, an alternative would be, and if, going back to music, if you as a person are listening to a specific artist and say you listen to that artist, say, you know, 50% of the time, that artist gets 50% of your subscription. So that's not necessarily a sale as in like a, you know, a transaction. It's still a subscription service, but you're actually making it far more equitable, because you're actually assigning value to your preferences, to the user's song plays. So that's called the user-centric model. And that's something that I believe is far more equitable.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree with that, actually. I think that's slowly coming to light. I think everyone's digging a little bit deeper now into some of these streaming services and really understanding it. So can you relate it to some of the experience, obviously, that you went through? I mean, did you go through this kind of, how's the business model going to work for everything that you were doing at SongTwist? And were there those similar kind of conversations that were going about? Or did you kind of know straight away, like, we're going to do this fairly and this is how it's going to go?
Well, that was the intention. The intention was to actually implement this more fair model. And I think there's still a lot of promise in that model. And I think it's, but I think what one of the problems is again, going back to, you've got these single kind of gatekeepers, that makes it very difficult, because you can't really go in to a situation, say with Spotify, for example, where the major record labels already own a significant piece of the company, and suggest that you change that model. If you change that model, it's going to disrupt the current payout system. So it's just not going to necessarily happen that way. So in my opinion, you know, there has to be something new. I think there has to be a totally different approach when it comes to finding a more equitable model for artists. And I think there has to be, you know, perhaps a new service. And that's what I was, you know, working on with SongTwist, was creating a new service that was more focused on an equitable model for artists.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think that brings me to a good question of, what do you think the future of streaming is going to look like? What is it? What's the landscape going to be?
You know, it's difficult, and it's especially, you know, complicated right now with COVID, because I think a lot of artists before COVID, they were mostly saying, you know, well, we can make money from venues and, you know, doing live concerts and things like that. And a lot of the I don't know what I would call them, but the people who were anti big record label, you know, being the single gatekeeper argument people, they would try to argue that, well, artists can make all this money from live venues and all this stuff. So that used to be the primary argument, that they could do that. Now with COVID, it makes it a lot harder. You can still, you know, do that online, I guess, but in short, I think that the future is going to continue to go on with this trend, where technology has enabled artists to have the tools that they need in order to promote their music. So if you think about artists as like a startup, I think that there's, you know, some of the blame is on the major record labels. Some of it is on the streaming services. There's a lot of that, but there's also the fundamental just change with the technology. And I think what that has done is it's done a lot of what has happened in the entrepreneurial, you know, the startup space, where because we have these resources now available, we're expected to use them. And if we don't use them, it's kind of like, you know, say Google, for example, if I create a startup, if I have an idea for a great startup, Google is not going to just come to me and try to buy my company because I have a great idea. That's never going to happen. Because of the resources that now exist, I have to put in the work and the effort and use those resources in order to build up the company enough to show that there's significant value for them if they were to buy my company. So if you're an artist, you're kind of now expected to do the same thing, you know, utilize the resources that are there and try to, you know, promote yourself, try to do these things that are going to help yourself rise up to a point where, if you look at it from like a business perspective, you can show that you have a significant ROI, return on investment, for your music. So in that way, the music business has changed just because of the nature of technology. It's even the good thing about it is it's even the playing field. The bad thing about it is it's even the playing field. So everyone now can do similar things. So you are now competing against many other artists who have the same great ideas. But that's where I think it takes a lot of creativity to do really well and to stand out from the crowd. Do something creative, do something different, do something that's going to make you stand out among all these other artists. So that would be my synopsis.
Yeah. And that's probably actually led, I was going to ask you, what advice would you give to artists that are trying to obviously come to the fore of this streaming service or of these streaming services, right, and really kind of make it? But I'm guessing you're saying redefine who you are, get creative with your brand, maybe.
Yeah, I think get creative, and it's important that you say brand, because I think that a large part of it is in creating a brand. You are effectively, when you're promoting yourself and you're putting yourself out there, you are essentially creating a brand. If you create a brand that people remember and you really stand out and you show how you're different, you know, people remember that. And a lot of the same rules for startups apply to music. Now, there's certain things that, you know, are not going to be changed easily, like the whole royalty payout system for Spotify. That's not going to be changed easily. But I think that what artists have to remember is that this is one of many platforms, and this is just one thing that you can use to promote your music and get it out there and get it in front of listeners. But don't expect any single magic bullet. You know, there is not going to be a single magic bullet. I think something that artists forget is that, and maybe it didn't used to be this way, but it is this way now, you are effectively a business owner. And as a business owner, you know, artists typically tend to focus, if we were to use similar parallel logic, as an artist, the music that you make, your music is your product. If I were, as a business owner, just focused on my product and I didn't focus on anything else in my business, I wouldn't do very well, because there's so many other parts to a business than just the product. There's marketing, there's sales, there's all these other components. So that's where you can use these tools that exist to help with things like that, to help with the things that maybe you're not necessarily, you know, great at. If you want to just focus on the music and just create the music, then try to find either services or other people who can help you with some of the other parts of your business, quote unquote, because those are going to be necessary in order for your product to succeed.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And that is exactly what we preach over at Hypertribe. So I'm so glad you've said that. I mean, it just works out perfectly.
Right.
For us then. But yeah, thank you so much, Michael. Thanks for taking the time anyway. Was there anything else that you wanted to add or you wanted to share about, you know, what you're up to at the moment?
No, you know, I think that there's still a lot of promise for innovation in the music space. And I think that, you know, it's unfortunate that there are some things right now that it seems hard to change, like the, you know, the way royalties work and all the major streaming services, for example. But we can't let the negative distract us from the positives. There's a lot of positives and a lot of opportunity, I still feel like, in the music business and things that we can do. So, you know, I think that there should be continued innovation there. And especially when it comes to, in my mind, the most important thing is bringing equality to the music business. Without equality and without making things more equitable, it leaves the music industry being kind of bleak. So, you know, anything that we can do, and nowadays with technology, let's use that technology to advance our efforts and to help make the industry more equitable.
Awesome. Well, you heard it first from Michael Brooks. So thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate your time a lot.